podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
The 2023 season is finally over. Max Verstappen is the champion, has been for a very long time, but Sergio Perez finishes second in the championship. Unbelievable scenes, the first time ever Red Bull Racing take a 1 and 2, and goodness me, there was actually some championship fights all the way up and down the field, but we all still felt that this was incredibly boring, as is the way with this track. G'day, I'm James. Welcome to the Australian Opinion on Formula One here at the Lakeside Drive F1 podcast. In this episode, we review the last round of the 2023 season at Abu Dhabi. And I'm joined by my friends and yours, Yas Queen Marina's expert. I stuffed it. Campy, hello, mate.
Hello. Hello, listener.
Yes. Very good, yeah. Fail town. Freya, hello.
Hello, Ask Queen. How are you doing? Yeah. Yes, very well.
Good.
Very well. This is off to a great start.
Now, the overwhelming feedback, Freya, from last week, did you have a boat party today?
Not today. I had a very quiet, relaxed day today, actually, after a big Thanksgiving dinner last night. So, sorry, everybody who is after some more unhinged content.
Sorry.
I'm going to have to leave that to sober Campy for that to try and deliver on that front.
It was outstanding. In every single way, it was outstanding, Freya. Everyone loved it. So there is some merit to Formula Cold Ones at some point next year. We can all agree on that. Just a couple of things up front before we get into the end of the year. Very excitingly, and you would have heard right at the very beginning of this episode, we're now part of a new network, the Sports Social Podcast Network, which is really exciting for us. It'll give us some more access, hopefully, for 2024. And look, we're just really, really happy to be part of that team, and a massive shout out to their team for getting in touch again and welcoming us into the family so quickly. That's really, really cool. Another thing, and I've said this on Discord, if you could do me a favor, I can't actually say anything just yet, but please do me a favor. If you don't yet follow us on Instagram, can you please go over and give us a follow? Because tomorrow there is some chats happening, and it would be very good if our Instagram following count would be as high as physically possible for that. Hopefully I can let you know some more in a little bit, but that's my absolute plea, please. YouTube now at this point is low on my priority list. It is now Instagram followers. You'll figure that out why. But let's just talk more broadly, shall we, over the course of the Yas Marina. That's just how I'm going to call it now. And I think, Freya, we'll start with you. We always come into this round not expecting all that much to happen, do we? Plenty of overtakes, though, as there always is, but it just never feels that energy like any other racetrack that we go to.
Yeah, it's not a particularly dramatic course, or it's not a course that produces very dramatic moments, we find. Obviously, there is one major exception to that, but without kind of driver error, this is not a racetrack that is going to give us some of those really extreme kind of, you know, heart pumping moments that we're going to see on some of the street tracks and some of the, you know, built deliberately designed courses that are built to try and create those moments of action. I think the tricky thing is that when you have a track like that and you combine that with a season where both major championships have been wrapped up, there's very little left to play for. Now, that's not quite correct, especially if you look at the teams further down the grid. There's still some big achievements for them to try and kind of lock in this last weekend. But, you know, when you don't have the kind of jeopardy of who's going to win the actual championship or even constructors, and you pair that with a kind of low drama track, so to speak, it doesn't necessarily make for, you know, the most thrilling race that we might see.
Campy, Karun Chandhok helped redesign this track and made it more exciting, didn't he?
Look, as a complex, it's not a bad complex, but it's after the first four or five laps, I thought, geez, we're on for a good race here. There's lots happening. There was lots of, you know, tight following, and there was some great moves being made. Piastri was putting pressure on Leclerc at the start, and I thought, geez, we're in for a good race here. I mean, Yuki Tsunoda jumped up the order. But as the race played out, just tyres get in the way, mandatory pit stops would make it better, all those things. But, it played out. We were sort of waiting for something to happen the whole race, and sometimes in Formula One it doesn't really happen. We're caught waiting like Ferrari for a safety car, really, and it just didn't really eventuate. So, yeah, that's the reality, isn't it?
I think they're still waiting.
And Brazil.
Carlos is still out.
Brazil is the traditional last race of the season, as is Melbourne, the first start. Mm. So everything either side of that is just extra, and it's not that great, really, if you ask a hardcore true fan like ourselves.
Yep. Yeah, you're not wrong. 24 rounds next year, and testing is not far away. It was a very small number of days, really, until we start 2024. Quite honestly, it's been a very dominant season, obviously, for Max Verstappen and for Red Bull Racing. As I mentioned in my intro, first time they've been able to get a 1 and 2. We're going to go into a deeper dive on the entire championship in another episode, so we won't spend too much time talking about Max's dominance or all of the incredible stats and records that he's broken this year. But instead, what we'll do is we'll keep going. Let's go to our Discord comment of the week.
And now it's time for the Discord comment of the week.
And this one this week comes not from Ross on purpose. I just ignored everything that Ross said this weekend on the Discord. Not true. It comes from Steenroller replying to Destruct. Destruct says, can't wait for the first car launch. And Steenroller replies, apologies if this spoils the surprise, but it will be a Red Bull and its livery will look very similar to each of its previous 15 years worth of liveries, which is very true. I don't know why they bother. They might as well launch the car doing donuts. In fact, just take the vision of Max Verstappen coming out of the cloud of smoke and go, there's the car launch. We've done it already. No further questions, Your Honour. Freya, who is your Discord legend of this week?
So my Discord legend goes to somebody who's actually one room away for me at the moment, and this was voted by the Discord, though. So it is kind of the Discord's comment of the week, if that makes sense, rather than mine. And this actually goes to my husband, Daniel, who said, I want Piastri to beat Norris just so he can think about it all summer.
Very good.
That's very good. What about you, Campy? Who did you find?
Look, I can't remember the name of the person who posted it, but it was a meme, and it was the two Spider-Men, and they looked identical, and it was Checo saying he crashed into me and Lando saying he crashed into me.
Yeah, very good.
It was very good.
Also, Campy describing a meme, the Spider-Man, is only one of my favourite moments.
Thanks for your whole segment, Campy describing memes to us.
A massive shout out to all of the people who are part of our Discord. There are around 400 of you. All of you are incredibly loved by the three of us. We have really appreciated all of the ridiculousness that you have put into that space over the course of not every race weekend, but for everything else, watching V8 Supercars or MotoGP or whatever it is. It has been such a pleasure to have you. If you are not yet part of that Discord community, please feel free to join. You can do that via the link in the description, wherever you're watching or listening, or just go to our website and click the community button. It is a place that will remain active all the way through the off season because there will still be plenty of things to talk about. All right, let's go to Tommy T's television broadcast review. And my least favorite thing I've ever seen as a bit of text over a flyover that said, this is a sustainable flyover in tying in with F1's net zero by 2030.
Oh, my God.
How in the fucking possible world do you think that just putting that as an overlay is how you get away with it? Can we just stop this nonsense? When you bump the entire Formula One calendar around the world on 17 DHL 777s and then put that over, just have the flyover. People are happy to have the flyover. It's absolutely fine. I mean, they were miserably time off target. There was absolutely no way they knew that they were close. But at least we had one. That was exciting. We had one. But to put that overlay on was just absolutely ridiculous. How do you prove that? How do you say it's sustainable? Anyway, it just absolutely does my head in.
So these planes were going to be here anyway. So now we're just going to make it part of the Grand Prix. Is that
unbelievable?
Yeah.
just come on, guys, just lift. Campy, let's talk more, though, about the anthem. Did you manage to hear a it was only a backing track and no singing, but what was your take?
No, didn't see it. I woke up at about 5 to 12 and then I was asleep by about 5 to 1, so I missed the end of the race and watched some highlights this morning. So I actually saw more F2 this weekend than I did the actual F1 stuff. It's been a long season and, yep, anyway. So that's my point.
Okay. Would you like to talk anything about the broadcast specifically that you saw whilst you were awake?
Yeah, it was okay. It was same. Got a long year. I think there's some contributors to Sky F1 that deserve the boot and shouldn't be there and should move on for next year. Laser being one of them. Naomi Schiff being another one.
Disagree.
And we had both of those two this weekend. But anyway, yeah, that's my take on it. But there you go.
What would you give the broadcast out of 10, Campy, for this weekend?
I'll give it a 6.
Very well considered, as always. Freya?
So I couldn't hear the anthem. That felt like a very kind of half-assed attempt, to be entirely honest. But once we got stuck into the racing, I think that's where I had some issues with what they were selecting to put on our screens, aka nothing that was actually happening on track. So I think it was by lap 9, there were already two on-track incidents being investigated and we didn't see either of them. There was that moment I was looking at the screen, I kind of looked away, I looked back and the McLarens had swapped. We didn't see anything here about it, nothing. And so, like, you know, I'm just going ahead and assuming that was team orders, but was that on track? I don't know. And then it was just things like you're getting replays of Norris's slow pit stop, which means that we missed what's going on the track. And I just kind of, we don't need to see that 3 times, show us what's going on, you know, when there's still racing happening. It's one thing if you're trying to buy time, you know, if the race has been delayed or something like that and they're giving us nice panning shots and, you know, that's fine. I understand you need to make up content when there's not much else to do, but not when you're in the first, you know, 10 laps and there's actually things to be showing. So I was fairly unimpressed.
Yeah, there was plenty. And this is the thing, right? There was one graphic that at least was helpful, which was the live championship standings, but the fact that they're only really focused on Ferrari and not like Williams and AlphaTauri, at no point did we see that battle that was going on too. I mean, Danny Ric was very close to being in the points by the end of the race if it wasn't for that tear off, which we'll talk about. But there were more championship points battles going on than I think we saw. And I mean, at this stage though, can we really blame them? It's been a very long season. Everyone's pretty over it. The answer is yes, we can blame them. It is their job. They should absolutely be doing better than they did. it's just, anyway, it just blows my mind. It blows my mind. And when you have that many presenters as part of your lineup, I don't understand why you can't keep it fresh and we keep changing through. The one thing, the only thing, the positive thing that I will say about Sky F1 this weekend was whoever decided to get Crofty to do that piece to camera for social media just before the start of FP2, I think he had about maybe a minute and a half window before he started comms. And he gave us, the viewer, a bit of a tour around the commentary box, which ended with him live broadcasting straight into FP2 with almost, he had better time on target than the fly pass. In fact, any fly pass really at all this year, probably. That was great bit of content. And he was actually very engaging. So as much as I really, it frustrates me sometimes, well done, Sky, and whoever was responsible for that, maybe Jess, who's a new producer, they're doing that. It looked really good. Otherwise, and Martin's great too. I mean, it's hard, isn't it? You, from a TV direction point of view, that's Formula One's fault. So if we see something stupid, that's not Sky's fault. That's F1's fault. But maybe the TV director wasn't the same as we had in Vegas. All right, before we get into our team by team analysis, we're going to take a quick ad break. We'll be back in just a second. And we are back. All right, let's start because we've got plenty to talk about with all of these teams. Now, Alfa Romeo Sauber, this is the last time we'll see Alfa Romeo as part of the Sauber collab. Not sure they'll miss it necessarily because there hasn't been anything really exciting to talk about for a very long time. They end up finishing the season in 9th with 16 points. But in terms of the race weekend, they had not ideal. Valtteri Bottas, after having an incredible qualifying in Vegas, who was then spun around, had a terrible race. He just had no pace at all this weekend. Qualified 18th, finished in 19th. Joe finished, qualified rather, in 19th, finished in 17th. This is not a team that is very exciting to talk about. I know, that's why we thought we'd start here. Campy, anything to add of Alfa Romeo before we see the season out?
Not really. Q1 knockouts are not great for any team, especially when it's a double, you know, both drivers get knocked out. So I think this is one of those races. It was dependent on where you qualified. There wasn't a massive shift up in numbers. You know, your qualifying position, I think the best mover up was Danny Ric with 4 positions. So that says to you sort of where the grid was at this weekend and just the way the race tracked, the track raced over the course of the weekend. And yeah, unfortunately for them, they couldn't do much. So there you go. I've stuffed that up again.
This is brilliant.
As I do. Well, literary skills are just. It's the last race.
The race track,
it still kind of made sense. Like, if you didn't correct yourself, I would have been fine.
Yeah.
But now we know what you meant to say.
Add it in.
But the problem is, I look at James laughing at me. I'm like, oh, God, I've done it again.
It's my favorite part of the week is just waiting to see what happens. The literary nonsense that ends up coming from you. Freya, what about you for Alfa Romeo Sauber?
Not much to add. I understand, though, that Ruth Buscombe will be leaving as their head strategist. So I look forward to seeing, A, where she goes next, but B, who's going to be looking after that team. I think next year, yeah, we're obviously going to see quite a lot of changes, but it's also going to be still in that awkward stage of a kind of holding pattern, really, until, you know, but it's still 2 full seasons, right, until we get the next set of regs. So, and we get, you know, significant changes to what we're going to be seeing in 2026. So it's still, you know, worth putting in the effort, obviously. But we could see some interesting stuff going on there. So not much to add for this season, but I'm intrigued as to see what they'll do in 2024.
Haas finished in 10th with 12 points. They had a pretty okay start to the season. This car rather just absolutely chews tyres. It's not really good at all. Surely they need to fix that. I mean, they need to fix plenty of things, and it's still ridiculous to me that they're sort of continuing on the path that they've always done rather than trying to make some big changes. But Hülkenberg qualified in 8th. It was a very good qualifying session for him. But again, as always, finished outside the points in 15th. Magnussen qualified 17th, finished outside, well outside, 20th. It's, again, not much to say about these Ferrari customer teams right at the very back of the pack. They generally find themselves here, Campy, as we go through regulation changes, as everything settles down. For whatever reason, Ferrari power unit customer teams never end up being as good as the Mercedes.
Yeah, look, it's the same old story with Haas, that you had one driver that qualified really well. I mean, I think we've only had a couple of races where both drivers have put it into Q1 and, you know, within 7 or 8 laps, tyres are chewed up, race pace is, compared to everybody else, is hideous, and they drop down the pack and they hold on for Hulk held on for a 14th last night or something. So frustrating for him, because these drivers are clearly competent enough to get the job done in the if they had the machinery, and the reality is they don't. And whilst they can do it over one lap and perform well, does that really mean anything on a Saturday? No, well, it's all about Sunday. That's when points are given out. So frustrating for them. This team needs some clear objectives moving forward, because why else do you go racing? I mean, you want to win. They are a long way off winning. They are, you know. Anyway, look, let's hope over the next few years, they develop the off-track stuff as much as they need to, but you need, you know, a couple of $1 billion worth of investment to do it properly and get the right people into the team and go from there. But the reality is what they've been doing works for 4 or 5 races at the start of the year, but once upgrades come on the other teams, then it tends to be all over for them from a point-scoring perspective. So, I mean, we've seen this team with Grosjean 2 years in a row, you know, 5th place in Melbourne, do perform really well. But the reality is it's not sustainable over a 24 race season. So figure it out, move on, and be frustrating team to work.
Yeah, Freya, that was going to be my question to you. It's going to be very hard for these individual team members to come together to want to go racing. It doesn't matter if they've got 5 or three seats on the pit wall to save the wait. It doesn't matter where you're sitting. It's going to be very frustrating to turn up week in, week out, and know one of your drivers might qualify well, but reality is you're not going to score that many points compared to your competitors.
Yeah, trying to find motivation. I was actually thinking about that as we were watching it this morning, and you think beyond the drivers, because I think every single one of the drivers is there doing something amazing, right? So regardless of what team you're in, as much as they'll all say, it's no fun trundling around at the back, they're still racing and that's what they want to be doing. So I don't feel that sorry for them. But for the rest of the employees at that organisation, just motivation is really tough, and it's a long season and it's long hours and it's a tricky schedule, and motivation can be tricky enough to understand as it is. And I think for anybody who works in Formula One, it's not just about a paycheck. It's because they're really passionate about motorsport, about development, about technology, about competition. And so, you just have to hold on really tightly to those values and those passions. And you really have to be quite, obsessed and passionate about it in order to last, especially if you're working for a team that's, potential, especially over the course of a season, is going to be fairly limited. All you can say is that they have to be some very passionate people who love what they do and just keep turning up and giving it their best.
It's a long season. It's going to be a longer season next year. And you can only imagine, some of these mechanics who are have very specific roles for drivers, there's not really a choice for them to sort of sit out a couple of Grand Prix and have someone else, maybe like the marketing team could do more easily or others. So there has to come a time, doesn't there, that this isn't sustainable anymore. And so I wonder about the turnover that we'll see not only at the end of this year, because I know a lot of people are still absolutely shattered from Vegas and we still had another Grand Prix to do and so are just so cooked. Tommy T quit halfway through this bloody season and he's only talking about it on the other side of the world, let alone actually traveling.
Yeah. And I think it was we saw something earlier in the week of Daniel Ricciardo coming out and saying, wait, what? No, when he saw that there's going to be a triple header at the end of the season with Vegas in the middle of it. And you just go, have we learned nothing from these last few weeks where you've got people running on, smell of an oily rag, trying to get some fuel to keep going for their last couple of weekends? And it's the Vegas thing. So if that scheduling stays the same and you're basically asking these people to become nocturnal for 6 days and then switch time zones and go somewhere else and be racing. And that's the thing, especially with a triple header, you've got 3 days before you're back doing media and looking at the track ahead. And it's, to have a reaction from somebody like Daniel, who's pretty diplomatic with his responses to these types of things, which might otherwise be quite, controversial, and other people seem to be more happy to voice their opinions, he often doesn't. So to hear him say that and pretty strongly, does really tell you just how hard it's been for them the last couple of weeks.
Campy, you were speaking about goals for Haas. A team who has goals, who is actually working towards it, is Williams. They finished 7th in the championship, 28 points, just ahead of AlphaTauri on 25th. But there is a very clear reason to me as to why this team has been able to make the changes that it's needed to. And obviously Claire Williams and Campy, you love to remind everyone that she set this team up for success, and absolutely she did. Jos Capito had it for a bit, but James Vowles, Freya, has absolutely taken over and has pleased everyone with his beautiful toned voice, giving us updates, very specific updates on everything possible. And it's been an absolute joy to have him as a team principal this year.
The Williams of this year is just unrecognizable in comparison to what we saw last year. Obviously this is something that has been built over time, as you were saying, but to see such an immediate impact from, both the driver lineup, but then in terms of Alex's leadership, but then also James Vowles, I think it just shows how important that leadership is, and perhaps something that they had been not necessarily struggling with, but just hadn't had somebody who had the right approach for what that team needs based on where they are in the standings and what they're trying to achieve. I think he appears to be going about it in all the right ways. He said after the race that they've made some really aggressive decisions in terms of how they plan to progress for next year, which he said, you know, we as a team, we weren't necessarily making decisions like that before, and so very proud of people to have that confidence to go in and back themselves when it comes to development for next year. And talking about what their place in the constructors of seventh means to them, it's just huge. He said, you know, go and look at all the faces of the guys in their garage and, of course, everybody back at the factory. It means everything. They haven't been this high in the constructors for a very long time. And that's where I think they do have to celebrate their wins. It's very easy to say, well, seventh in the constructors doesn't, you know, it's not a really significant result, but it is to them based on where they're coming from. And we've talked about this before. When you're in some of these teams who are tend to be backmarkers, you've got to set your own goals and celebrate them when you get there, because if you are constantly looking to the podium, you're going to be perpetually disappointed, and that's not a great state of mind.
Campy, there's obviously some tracks where Williams are incredibly strong and there are some tracks where they're not.
Yep.
But really, it was AlphaTauri's seventh place to lose this weekend because of Tsunoda's pace. It was a shame about Danny Ric. Again, we'll talk about it in a little bit. But also, Tsunoda left points on the table in Mexico and a few other times this year where I think he will probably regret that in terms of that position probably almost being theirs. But for Alex Albon and Martin and Crofty loved this stat. He absolutely outqualified Logan Sargeant in the opposite of what happened to him in 2020 with Max Verstappen. So in terms of driver pairing, we don't know any news yet, but this is the week where things will start happening. Do you think Logan Sargeant has done enough in the last couple of rounds to keep his seat?
No, not at all. He's... No. I don't know how else to say it. I've said everything about Sargeant this year that we possibly can. He had one good qualifying, was it in Vegas, where they both made the top 10. So it's just not – it hasn't been good enough, and there must be enough – for me, there's enough off track – sorry, on track in the practice sessions. There is enough data to assess where this driver's at. Yes, he's improved since where he was from the start of the year, but the whole team's improved. The whole car's improved. I think the reason why Williams has done so well in the constructors this year is because for the first time in a long time, they've genuinely had some consistency of pace across multiple faceted racetracks. So they've done well. Yes, they're always going to have tracks that suit the way that their car drives, and you know, we know that long straights, low levels of downforce suits that car very well. But we've also seen them do really like be competitive in places like Monaco, which shouldn't suit their car as well. So we're not scoring points there yet, but the consistency across the board's been really good for that team. So look, they need to bring someone in that's going to help Albon lead that team on track, and you'd hope someone to push them, because when Albon's being pushed, the team's in a better place and they need a good calibre driver. Oh, what about Hulk to Williams? He'd be a great asset for that team, would he not? Do they go with, you know, a young person coming through? I mean, Teo Pourchaire wrapped up the F2 championship yesterday, but there's no one in that category that really, with out-and-out speed, that other than Frederik Vesti, that makes me say, well, he's probably the only one you'd take a punt on in the up-and-comers. So, well, let's see what happens, but they'll be right. They'll be here next year and they'll get on the improve as well, and Vowles' leadership's been great.
Yeah. Well, Zach O'Sullivan jumped in for FP1. Don't forget we had 10 new drivers in Free Practice 1 here at Abu Dhabi, which was very interesting to see. But Zach O'Sullivan driving in F2 next year under the Williams Junior program. So there is potential, but of course he needs to do that, get some super license points, and then be able to progress into F1. So I think, Campy, in terms of the call about Hulk, that's something that he explored, but Haas didn't let him leave his contract. So there is something to be said, I think, for some steady hands maybe for that team just to help them progress. But upgrades for next year and certainly more prize money now as a result. So we'll see what happens. Let's talk about Alpine. They were totally in no man's land in this championship. So they finished sixth with 120 points. Pierre Gasly and Esteban Ocon just bitching about each other for most of, well, mostly it was Gasly bitching about Ocon and track preference and pit stop strategy preference and all the rest of it for most of this race. That was probably the entertaining radio commentary that we got. He qualified in 10th, Gasly, and finished in 13th. Ocon, 12th and 12th. Again, outside of the points, again, didn't really bloody matter because they were in no man's land. Freya, Alpine, they still have no leadership. Maybe they'll have a team principal for next year.
Who would have thought that that might be relevant? We've just been talking about a team who, where we've seen the most, you know, kind of dramatic transformation has come most likely at the hands of, you know, having really effective leadership. And so when you have a team that, you know, appears to have none, it's no surprise to anybody that they seem to be struggling with direction. This weekend was interesting in that, like, they were in no man's land. Gasly had a tricky race. He had a few kind of good overtakes at the very start there. It looked like he might have a bit of a promising race and still, you know, finish in the points. He had a few overtakes on Hamilton and then Perez, both in the first lap, but then he got damage to his rear from Perez. Then he had that moment with Hamilton, and it kind of looks like, it depends on whose, you know, perspective, of course, with all of his stuff that you're going to take, but it kind of looks like Gasly had a lockup and Hamilton didn't quite react in time to avert hitting his car. But then also there was quite a bit of, like, there was enough space between them that it felt like it could have been avoidable. And the outcome of it was a very damaged diffuser. And so if you're dishing out penalties, to me, I kind of go, you've just left a car with damage that is likely to affect the remainder of their race. I was fairly surprised that Hamilton didn't get a penalty for hitting Gasly, especially given some of the other penalties that we've seen this season for things that seem to be actually less less affecting in terms of race outcomes and the drivability of their car. But this is an interesting team, I think, in that they've had so much kind of show about them, especially over the last month. But I kind of go, where's the really meaningful stuff happening? Because you can, you know, put lots of glitter all over your team with, you know, famous investors and that type of thing, but you don't have a team principal. You know, again, it's the fruit bowl in the kitchen. It's not going to change your culture. Like, you've got to make some really, you know, important decisions that direct the fundamental movement of this team. What I would say is that at least they're not jumping into a contract with somebody who might not be the best fit for that team. You know, maybe this absence of a permanent position there means that they're actually giving it some good thought. But I think that might be leaning towards, you know, pretty heavily giving them the benefit of the doubt in this situation.
Yeah, they've got a celebrity fruit bowl back at Alpine. Yeah. They just wheel out whoever celebrity is available to talk to the press. I think Rory McIlroy was team principal for some of the rounds there, at least in everyone else's mind. They just really need to sort it out, because at this stage, when we go racing again in Bahrain next year, if Williams are going to make these steps forwards like they've been doing, then trajectory is good for that team. Mercedes power unit, McLaren are doing well with it. Aston Martin are doing well with it. Williams should be doing well with it next year as well. They will probably be under threat. So let's hope behind the scenes they've already worked something out. AlphaTauri, again, they finished eighth, just behind Williams, a bit on 25 points. Franz Tost has been just incredible for such a long time in this sport. It'll be odd to not see him around, but as he said to Martin on the gridwalk, he'll be watching every opportunity he can. Yuki Tsunoda was brilliant all weekend, Campy. He had pace from the beginning. His qualifying was outstanding. His race pace was really, really good. It's just a shame the car wasn't fully there, but they brought floor upgrades for this weekend, which clearly suited Yuki really nicely.
Yeah, I think, look, if you look at AlphaTauri's season, it's been a tale of two halves. Their first half was diabolical and they were absolutely nowhere. There was no leadership. There was no direction. Danny Ric comes in and the other guy left. I can't even remember his name now. It's Nick DeVries. He was gone. Danny came in and he provided an on-track direction for that team to go in. And the car's been set up to do so. And since then, the points have flowed their way. If they had have had Danny Ric in that seat all year, it would have been a very different season. They wouldn't have beaten Alpine, but they definitely would have beat Williams, not Alpine. So, oh, look, the reality is, what's so funny about that?
Nothing at all.
It's early, geez.
Don't talk to me about so, early.
Look, the reality is Yuki is reaping the benefits of the direction changes made at that team. And he did. He drove fantastically well, qualified super well, had some race pace but fell away to the end. That one stop didn't work. They probably stayed out too long. And believe it or not, Yuki Tsunoda's led more laps this year than Fernando Alonso. So it's an interesting stat for you.
Surely not. Really?
Seriously.
Wow.
Yeah, 5-3.
God.
So, look, they showed some pace, but they fell away. But, yeah, it's interesting. So, look, good weekend. I think Danny Ric's race pace, he shit the bed in qualifying, right? Mm. So he didn't extract out of the car what he needed. So he started back, but he showed some good pace to beat the Alpines on the back of it, and his pace was driving him up the grid by the end of the race, whereas, I mean, Yuki being up the front, you don't think he's going to be up the front. So, unfortunate Danny Ric didn't get some points this weekend, but I think that team's in a fairly solid position for next year with a bit of driver change up and some new objectives for the car and where it goes on track. So, let's see where it goes. I don't think Danny Ric will be there too long.
He'll be getting
a nice little rocket boost up to the next top team. So,
the rocket boost, I think, will continue for the car itself. For whatever reason, whoever in Red Bull has not listened to this podcast and is not calling it Toro Bosso, which is a missed opportunity. For some reason, this team, they've gathered around a table, many, many people who are very smart, and they've all gone, do you know what? We need to change our name again. And everyone said, yes, okay, we agree with that. No worries. What should we do? What should we do? I know. Let's call ourselves Racing Bulls. Really? This is the best that you could come up with. Some of the best minds in marketing and branding and PR, and that is what you come up with. That is, it's already been filed for copyright and everything else. Thank you to the Discord for getting all of that information as well. So Racing Bulls for next year. Anyway, whatever. It's a terrible
disaster.
Name. But the car will probably be Red Bull from this year. So as they normally do, have a good time. And we saw with Pierre Gasly in 2021 had a really good car because they shared quite a lot of that information with Red Bull. Freya, is that the best, worst name you've ever heard?
It reminds me of when you've got to put a team together with a bunch of different people and you're trying to, someone goes, all right, we need a team name to enter it. And so you try and combine all your last names or something. And you just end up with flagabada. And you go, that's the best we could do. You know, I wonder if they did a Racing Rules. Nah, that sounds silly. Or the Bulls Racing. And they're like, oh, I've got it. I've got it. Guys, just listen. Racing Bulls. Oh, there it is. Yeah, amazing. Good work. It is quite incredible. That's very funny.
Daniel Ricciardo is a Bills fan and he's gone, oh, we should call ourselves Racing Bills. And they've heard him say Racing Bulls and gone, that's a great idea, Daniel. We'll write that down. And then it's lost in translation.
Are they all
ridiculous.
Going to go to the Racing of the Bulls? That's what I want to know. They all have to show up there. I think they should sponsor the event and just see what happens. If you're going to call yourself that, you're going to have to really just get stuck into the history of the name and go to everything that relates to it.
One of the things, though, is Daniel Ric, at least being announced for AlphaTauri, has meant that more sponsors are coming to that team. So there will be a little bit more cash. Not that I imagine there's a problem with them being part of the Red Bull family with that, but at least it'll be interesting to see. Freya, just on AlphaTauri, though, it is interesting, as Campy said, the very clear difference between pre-Daniel and post. But a lot of this we also need to give a little bit of credit to Liam Lawson, because there was a directional change with Danny Ric. But by all accounts, Daniel and Liam worked really closely together, even when Daniel was sitting out races, in terms of talking through everything else. So Liam Lawson, very, very quick driver, has absolutely deserved, in my mind, a place on the grid for 2024. He might yet still get that. But AlphaTauri is still making steps forward, which is a good thing.
The only way that he will get a seat next year is if Danny Ric does go to Red Bull and they bring him in here. He confirmed very clearly that he's not taking the Williams seat. He said, I don't know who's going to be in it, but it won't be me. He's made that very clear. So I think the only way we'll see him is if we do see movement in this team with the Red Bulls. It was so disappointing with the tear-off stuck in DR's brake duct very early on. They would have actually, obviously had to completely change their strategy when that happened so early on. when it comes to talking about professionals, you know, we've just been talking about creative people coming up with terrible names. Anyone out there who has a better solution to tear-offs, please go and take your ideas immediately to the like FIA and to Formula One to share your ideas, because this has been happening. It's affected so many races now. Obviously, I'm not going to be able to recall them off the top of my head, but we've heard it on multiple occasions, and it does really affect the car and their performance ability. And so, and it just seems like such a, obviously visibility for the drivers is not a trivial issue, but the tear off itself feels like it. So this tiny little bit of plastic that can ruin somebody's race. So we need to get some inventors out there, some engineers maybe, anyone who, oh, you know, doesn't matter what you do. If you've got a good idea, come up with something better.
Windscreen wipers.
Windscreen wipers.
Windscreen wipers.
On your visor.
Or maybe they build it into the glove. Good. Maybe they build it into the glove so they can like do a little, I don't know.
Incredible.
But someone needs to come up with something better.
I love that we have to have sustainable flyovers, but we're happy to just put, you know, single-use plastic tear-offs into the environment. Like, you, give me a break, Formula One.
Virtue signaling bullshit from Formula One. We've had it all year. It's not going to stop. Get used to it.
Just put it, have a little bag in the car. Like Martin keeps saying, when I used to drive, we weren't allowed to chuck them out. Whoever made that change, just do that. Do that opposite kind of thing. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Again, we'll be back in just a second. And we're back. Let's talk about Aston Martin, who were fifth, 280 points. Lawrence Stroll was like our fourth, fifth. Who cares? I suppose you can say that when you've got that much money. Alonso qualified seventh, finished seventh. It wasn't too bad, the pace of this Aston Martin. Stroll qualified 13th and finished in 10th. Campy, Stroll's not done enough this year to keep his seat. He is going to keep the seat anyway, though. Do you think they finally got to grips with the upgrades and they're getting back on top of the progress of this car for next year?
Yeah, it looks like it. You know, with a Honda engine in that car of 2026, it's a real shame for Red Bull. They've got to smash that partnership. It's opportunistic for them. So for Aston Martin to have that relationship moving forward, so I think look, Fernando will be eyeing off 2026 as his world championship year, really. So he'll stick around to then. Stroll will stick around to then because his dad will want him to, you know, have a shot at a world championship. But the reality is he won't win it, and I'm comfortable in saying that. He will never be a Formula One World Drivers Champion, although Fernando or someone did say he would be one day when he first came. So, look, Aston Martin left a hell of a lot on the table this year. Well, they did well with Fernando, but their second driver failed to deliver them the points they needed. So, look, unfortunately for them, they'll be back. I think organisationally, as much as I hate to admit it, Lawrence Stroll is a very, very accomplished and good businessman and knows how to manage people, knows how to get deals and the best outcomes. So he's shown with Aston Martin what he can do by buying a stake in Williams early on and then owning a team and progressing up the grid. So I think we might see them as world champions, dare I say it, one day. And kudos, claps to him. He's done very well.
There it is.
Fortunate.
Freya, it wasn't too bad.
I'll stop watching F1 when that happens.
Fernando accused of brake checking coming out of the pits with Hamilton behind. I think he was just trying to not give Hamilton DRS rather than brake checking per se, trying to do big brain Fernando things. But it was good to see a little bit of a battle going on. And look, Stroll had some good battles too and managed to get out on top. You know, running out the last race in points is probably not where they were expecting at the beginning of the year, maybe higher up, but Aston Martin and Fernando will be happy that they're at least getting some more points again.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's still a question for them in terms of, you know, when they obviously like brought those upgrades, they seemed to go in the complete wrong direction for the set of regs and how that car works. I wonder if they've still fully understood that because this is a team who, for Alonso at least, was pushing for podiums. And so as much as he's qualified seventh, finished seventh, you know, great. When you think about where it was for earlier in the season, that's not as impressive. It is impressive when you think about the fact that they were both out in Q1, three races ago, four races ago. So I would just be cautious in saying how well they have kind of understood how that worked or didn't work. And we've talked about that being quite a bit of an experiment for a bit after they had suddenly kind of realized the error of their ways. But I think they'll still be wanting to unpack that further in terms of just, you know, how they got it so wrong so confidently as well. You know, they were kind of going on about those upgrades and how fantastic they were going to be, and then look what happened. So I think there's still something there that they probably need to understand better, because it just went so wrong so quickly.
McLaren finished fourth, 302 points, well clear of Aston Martin in the end. Piastri qualified third, great qualifying from him, finished in sixth. Norris was on a great qualifying lap until he had a bit of a moment. Qualified fifth, finished fifth. McLaren really coming back after a terrible weekend last time around in Vegas. It does go to show, Campy, the track-specific car and circuits like Vegas compared to something like Abu Dhabi, it really is important. And Zak Brown saying you don't design your car for every circuit, you're going to have stronger and weaker ones, really highlighted here this weekend with their pace.
Yeah, I think it's good forecast for what we see in the future. I think teams are not going to be as dominant as Red Bull has been this year. They're going to have massive highs and massive lows in the season compared to what track we're on. So, yeah, look, good season for them, considering it was really only half a season. It would have been a very different year looking at it if they had got it right from day one.
Yeah, look,
stoked to see Piastri do well, out-qualify Lando again, albeit Lando made mistakes. He's starting to make them a bit too often, in my opinion. So, look, on the up for McLaren, everything's good about them. Do I want them to perform well? Well, I got Oscar, and that's awesome, and I'll root for him and I'll support him, but I'm still a bit off Zak Brown, if I'm 100% completely honest with you. And I'm not the biggest Lando fan, but I might just be trying to build that up. So there's a bit of a rivalry there. So,
look. Shock.
Great season for them. They didn't have the pace they probably wanted last night. So there you go. Oscar really struggled to get Yuki. I mean, he did eventually, but geez, it was frustrating to watch, you know, four or five laps of that happening. But, it's probably the best position for them to finish in last night compared to where they probably wanted to be. So
Oscar's had a pretty good year, Freya, all things considering. The start of the year, that was a tractor. It had the aerodynamics of a fridge. And now he's able to, you know, be getting points regularly. For his rookie season, I think he'd be pretty happy with that, especially with his sprint race victory too. Again, we have a bit more of a deeper dive in a later episode, but for them to finish fourth in the championship again, and not like it was when DR was wooed across from Renault, this is pure pace. It wasn't because Ferrari had things happening to them behind the scenes that allowed McLaren to get up. This is genuine McLaren pace, which is very exciting, because if any team is going to catch Red Bull Racing next year, McLaren are probably the highest on that list to close the gap.
Well, especially if you do ask Lando Norris. That was one of the my other favorite moments on the Discord, actually, was after Norris had binned his qualifying, and somebody said, you know, how long will it be before he says he should have been on pole, or he was nearly on pole, which is just a bit of a habit that he has kind of perhaps overstate the gap between, you know, the significance of the gap between him and Max. But it is probably true, I think, if they do continue with the progress that they have obviously made. And you think about what we're talking about here is McLaren fourth in the constructors. Meanwhile, you've got Alpine in sixth with a huge gap between them in points. And I think at the end of last year, we probably would have said that Alpine should have been fourth in the constructors. So I think it does show how much of a turnaround this season is. And it makes me nervous for the start of next season as well, when we get all excited, depending on who comes out looking really good after testing and in Bahrain, and then things just can change so drastically is really interesting. But another person also did make the point that this is the last time we'll be calling Oscar Piastri a rookie. I still think about rookies being kind of 2 years, I think, rather than just their first year. But technically, yeah, this is the end of his rookie season. And I think next year people will be starting to really expect to see some very high quality performances from him. And I think, you know, we certainly, or I absolutely have faith that he will deliver on that. He really is the real deal. And I think, you know, again, this is the first time, his first year in Formula One, and he's done exceptionally well. Thank goodness they did have that turnaround in terms of their design strategy.
Anyone who walks into the paddock with a match-worn Brett Lee ODI shirt is a king as far as I'm concerned.
Also paired with the kind of knee-length, like, you know, beige-coloured shorts. Someone give him a New Balance deal so that he can just go full dad and wear the sneakers. I'll send him some socks. We can get him some scrunchy socks because he needs to start dressing according to his personality, and his personality is dad, even though he is exceptionally young.
Love that for him. Mercedes, they finished second in the championship. Say, no. I'm kidding. Of course he can say.
Lando, Jimmy. Lando did an interview this year.
Sorry, Kevin.
Lando did an interview this year and this weekend, and he said, "I'm driving the best I've ever driven." That says something to me that he is under pressure from an Oscar Piastri who's come in a rookie and performed the way he has, particularly in the second half of the year where he's put pressure on him consistently. It's not quite there. Clearly, Lando is still probably quicker over one lap and probably quicker over race pace, but it is getting closer every weekend. And look, when Oscar eventually is quicker and the tides have changed, I think we're going to see Lando throw some big tantrums next year and Oscar will be getting some big results.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that team dynamic changes. There is no doubt that Lando has been faster this year, but it's also Oscar's first year in Formula One. So he would have learned a lot. He would debrief with Mark and really sit through every race, understand what he can do better, learn how to manage these tyre compounds, which he's never driven before, all of those kinds of things. And he will put in the work. He'll come back to Brighton probably, have Christmas here, put in the work to be stronger for next season. And that to me is very exciting. And also it's good for Lando because Lando needs to be pushed too. It's the only way this team gets better towards the front of the grid. Again, Mercedes, second, 409 points. Russell qualified fourth, finished in third. Hamilton qualified in 11th, didn't have a good time, finished in 9th. George, the dominant driver out of these two this weekend, has to be said. And Freya, he did it all whilst feeling not that good.
Yeah, there's a few drivers who actually came into this weekend pretty unwell. I think Ocon was pretty ill as well. And me and my medical degree have to wonder if the if just
Fryer's pretty ill from last week too.
So. I was waiting for it.
Yes, very good, very good,
very good.
Yeah, I just kind of wonder if, you know, the burnout at the end of this season is kind of catching up with a few of them, and they're getting persistent coughs and fever here or there and stuff like that. And I mean, obviously, like they're fine, but you just have to wonder how their body is holding up. I think everyone was pretty excited for a break, with the exception of Daniel Ricciardo, who was like, "I wish this wasn't the end of the season because I only just got started." So yeah, that was a great effort. I just think, you know, if I'm unwell, I can't do anything. So I am very impressed by the resilience that these drivers have. And I think sometimes it is just a matter of accept and get on with it a little bit. You know, I'm not going to not race, let's be clear. And I feel the way I feel, I'm just going to do the best I can. So I'm still very impressed with their ability to perform at such a high level if they're not at 100%. What was interesting with Russell this weekend was that, yeah, as you said, very much the dominant performer out of the two of them. He said as well, though, he's like, "Checo was not even on my radar until the last 10 laps, did not realize he was there. And then all of a sudden they kind of gave him, they said, you know, this is where he is." And he was absolutely shocked. So responded to that, you know, reasonably well. Hamilton, on the other hand, I don't think I have seen or heard him as downbeat as he was after this race. We've had, obviously, you know, last year in particular when the car was just so slow and they just weren't even close to anything, but it was almost more confused and frustrated. There was a lot of emotion there in terms of frustration with where they are, passion to want to try and work with the team to improve it, all these very kind of forward-moving, motivating kind of emotions, as negative as they might have been. This was literally just downbeat and sad. And when they were talking about next year, they kind of said, you know, do you feel like you've understood, given the progress that you've now made, and you know, you've got several podiums towards the end of the year, probably should have been like, well, not necessarily, but potentially another one based on Texas, but then getting disqualified. Do you now have confidence going into next year that you've understood, you know, where there's been some issues this year? And he goes, no, not at all. Like, and so I was like, wow, just to openly say I don't have any confidence that we're going to come back with a better understanding and, you know, be competitive from the start next year is pretty telling. And the thing is, he's probably feeling frustrated in terms of going, he probably feels like he's done what he can to try and provide all of the input and the feedback and help them to solve problems and come up with solutions. And so if he's kind of feeling like he's done what he can to help them, I think he's probably feeling quite helpless. I haven't seen him that down. Not even a relief that the season's over, just really upset.
Helps they've got side pods in the car. Campy, Toto was being a bit of a cheerleader for both drivers at the end of the season, but really trying to get this second place. They managed to get it, but only just. This is not a great season for them, but at least, again, they've got side pods in the car, so it'll look like a Red Bull next year, like every other car will, and they'll be able to have some pace, probably.
Yeah, look, I think it's hard for Toto as a leader of such a great organisation winning the way that they did from 2014 onwards. So, look, it must be hard for him to take a step back and try and keep that same, you know, culture within the team, that winning culture. But when you're not getting results and putting in probably all the same hard work and losing key personnel and some of the best minds in the team as well, it must be difficult. So, look, I think Lewis can be a bit of a downer sometimes when he beats himself up. He eventually picks himself back up and does some things behind a wheel that not many people can do. So I wouldn't read too much into it. It's been a long season for them. It's not been the season they wanted. But they would be back next year. The organisation's great. I think they'll win some races next year probably. They've made some big strides since they finally decided to put some side pods on the car. So, and they'll have some knowledge from the way that they designed the car previously too, which you never know, down the track may help them in the further development of the car. So frustrating for them. George, congratulations. He needed that probably this weekend. He's to get a podium, go out on a bit of a high for the year. He drove well all weekend. Lewis didn't need a podium. Lewis needs wins and world championships. That's really the way he judges himself now. It's not even wins, really. So once he gets that car, I think we'll see a very different Lewis Hamilton.
Ferrari went full Ferrari. Someone remind them that hope is not a strategy. You can't just hope for a safety car, especially at a sub 50% likelihood of it. I just don't. At some point, someone, there was like an interview at some point in the last couple of weeks. I forgot to point this out. And it was like Ferrari's head of strategy was talking. And I'm like, my God, they actually have one. Completely, obviously, didn't do their job this weekend. Carlos Sainz wasn't even racing. Just didn't finish. It still says in the classification, DNF. So absolutely no point having him this weekend. Soz Carlos, great hair. No point you coming along. Charlotte Clerc took Carlos Sainz's technical and strategic brain in the last lap, at least. Qualified second, finished second. I'm trying to give Perez a bit of a lead within the 5 second, hold George up, but he didn't want to hold George up too much because he didn't want to be a bad sport, which I love Charles Leclerc more for that. And in fact, all season long, every time Charles has been in a podium with Max, you can see a real friendship between both of them. Like, it's genuine congratulations from Max to Charles and the other way around, which I really like. I think that's something that we sort of missed for a little bit there. But Campy, Ferrari, hope is not a strategy.
No, it's not. We've seen teams before stay out waiting for something to happen, and most of the time when they pit, it happens one or two laps after they pit, but it was never going to happen on this race. It was Yep. You can't put hope in something that's not going to deliver you anything. So there you go. Frustrating weekend for Carl Sainz. I mean, to crash in FP2 the way he did. Or was it FP1 with the red? Oh, FP2. I mean, that's two cars in two weekends for things that aren't really for nothing. That was his fault last weekend with the manhole cover or the water tap. you know, this weekend went over a bump in the road and had some aero, and it just, you know, the rear end of the car unsettled it and stepped out and put it into a wall. So frustrating couple of weekends for him. I think Leclerc probably capitalised on that. So, yeah, good result. Good-ish result for Leclerc. They probably should have had some more. So there you go. Interestingly, front row's been Max Leclerc for the last three races, which I didn't pick up on. So the Ferrari's found something over one lap, and they just need to convert it a bit more, I think. So they're well placed to do well next year too if they get the upgrades and the improvement that we all expect from them. And who doesn't want to see Ferrari up the front shitting the bed every race weekend, making mistakes like they normally do? It's just too good to watch. So.
Well, they finished third with 406 points, so 3 points behind Merck. Ferrari, it feels like, I mean, Charles is probably just frustrated more often than not, but it feels like this team, as Camby said, is in a good spot to really challenge towards the front for next year, with both drivers probably now really in sync and in tune with this car.
Yeah, I think it's good. Like we talked about it with McLaren in terms of saying it's good that they've figured this out and they're now challenging for podiums. It's good that Ferrari are not making the types of mistakes that we kind of thought were inevitable in every single race and we still joke about. To be fair, they haven't actually done that, not to a serious degree, for quite some time. We've kind of talked about, I think it was Leclerc's strategy in Vegas could have been better, and there's some questions like that, but they're not, you know, they're not dire. So they have made massive, massive changes, I think. And so you could probably put that down to Fred and some of the changes that he might be implementing there as well in terms of how they're going about things. I think this weekend as well, though, it's tricky because we don't see all the radios, and I could probably go and find it and see what direction the conversation went in. But I wonder if it kind of maybe showed a bit of a kind of gap for Ferrari in terms of their thinking, because it's interesting to me that it's coming from a driver to say, oh, wait a second, I've got an opportunity here now that Perez has made that overtake on George, and he seems to be the one running that strategy. And that strategy is not a how do I win this race strategy. It's a bigger picture. You know, it's that kind of outside of the box thinking when it comes to how you can best utilize differentials between different cars and that type of thing to influence an outcome that you are working towards. And I just kind of wonder if, you know, we've seen it from Sainz, we've seen it from Leclerc. I was like, this should be coming from the team when you're then in that situation and that opportunity might present itself. And I just wonder if it's shown just a bit of a gap in their thinking that they could be more creative in terms of thinking outside the box in how they're directing races. But I think we should see them be pretty successful next year, and they should be up there with McLaren and Red Bull every single weekend challenging for podiums for both of them. And I think that's going to be the more interesting thing for this team, assuming they continue that positive progress that we've seen. I think the more interesting thing is how they manage their two drivers, because neither of them are going to accept a second driver role, especially though, you know, let's say we hypothetical, if we get midway through the season and one of their drivers is starting to climb the championship ladder more quickly than the other, you know, is that person then expected to go in and support the other to get the best position possible? I think there's going to be some of those dynamics that, and it's not just Ferrari, it could happen at McLaren, at Alpine as well, and to how they manage that dynamic, that's going to be interesting to see.
Let's wrap this one up with Red Bull finished first on 860 points, which is more than double Mercedes in second. Verstappen first and first. Perez ninth and fourth. Perez was coming back. I mean, he stuffed qualifying and he did have to do more coming back, but ended up getting a 5-second penalty. We'll go more into depth in another episode, I think, but Verstappen, absolutely dominant. Perez, maybe not as good as he should have been, and he will be really thinking or imagining Daniel Ricciardo's face behind him at all times. But credit to Daniel Ricciardo in Vegas, said, you know, I know what it's like when you're a driver under pressure, and so he doesn't want to be that to Sergio. So I can only imagine behind the Red Bull closed doors, Danny Ric is just being Danny Ric and letting Helmut and Christian sorted out away from them. But just very quickly, Campy, it was a dominant weekend.
Danny Rick is a savage. He's saying all the right things in public, but behind closed doors, he's joking around and laughing with the two of them, being Danny Rick, being the big funny man in the circle, and Max and him have a great relationship, and he'll be making sure that every time he gets to interact with the three of them that he's putting more doubt in Sergio's mind. It's just how it's happening. It's good to watch. We saw it this year when he was the third driver at the start, you know, made Perez look like an idiot publicly. So, and not in like, not calling him out and stuff, just made him look uncomfortable in the way that Max and him had a relationship and the way that they could laugh and get on together. Checo was the third wheel all the time, and Danny Rick will exploit that in every chance he gets. So, yeah, absolute domination for Max Verstappen. Very good. I don't know what to say about Checo. We've had the same conversation every week since about round seven. So hasn't performed good enough, still not on the podium, hasn't done enough to deserve his seat. And with the car that he's got underneath him, well, he should be doing better, but the reality is he's not, and he's proven over more than half a season now, three quarters of it, that he doesn't have what it takes. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, we'll go more in depth in another episode about these two, but that is our team-by-team analysis. Let's talk about our driver of the day. Freya, who is your driver of the day?
Mine has to go to Yuki. He did a great job, and I'm just proud because there were several moments there that I got a bit nervous that he might just lose his cool a little bit, and he didn't. So that makes me really happy. I think that's an improvement that we've seen in comparison to the last couple of races, and I hope that he continues with that next year because that is absolutely his kind of Achilles heel. And so, you know, you look what he can do when he doesn't get flustered or he doesn't let that kind of frustration get the best of him. So I absolutely Yuki for me.
Campy?
Yeah, I would have said Yuki, but I'll give it to George. Just
what?
He got a podium. It's a good weekend for him.
Yeah.
He needs it.
Yeah.
Well, compared to the pace of Hamilton.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely right. I'm going to give it to Charles. All right, let's go fantasy team name competition. Congratulations to Wife Wins in first for this round. You had Danny Rick, George Russell, Max Verstappen with three-time chip on Piastri, Albon, McLaren and Rebel Racing. 309 points. Second, High Degrees of Difficulty. His name still goeth on for this season. 271 points. Equal second, Hot November Nights. Again, some names I found really funny, and thank you for being part of it. We will choose one favourite name to win some merchandise for this season. Finally, the far kin end, spelt in a way that gets around the filter. Drunk Freya is better. Three Ricastri, yeah, 81. Put it all on Red Bull, imminent Checo announcement. Today is the day. Ferrari bridesmaids, second season's over finally. DR3 forever in my heart, which we've had before, but it's always nice to say. And the all-in hairpin. Congratulations to the outright winner who will get some merch. Send us a message on Instagram, a DM on Instagram. Drunk Freya is better, 6,605 points. Second, DR sends his regards, 6,578 points. Third, Matt's box of LSD, Team 774, 6,543 points. I finished in 11th and Campy finished in 33rd. Very well done. Well, that is all the time that we have for this episode. A massive thank you to you for listening and watching wherever you are. We are not going anywhere just yet. We will be back next week, and we will also be back for a season review in a couple of weeks' time. A massive thank you to you both, Campy and Freya, and to you for listening and watching. See you next time on Lakeside Drive. Everyone happy? A version of happy, at least.
8 a.m. in a Monday morning, as happy as you can be.
In a Monday morning.
Is that like you live on a house?
Yeah. Yeah.
The gift that keeps on giving. Just tired, Campy.
Yeah.
And his words. Sports Social Podcast Network.